Blog Talk Radio.
Wins.
Losses.
Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey.
The most important interviews, best information, hottest news, and no topic is off limits.
Radio PI. Now on the Radio PI Podcast Network.
The Pittsburgh Penguins are the 2016 Stanley Cup champions. Just keep repeating that to yourself with a big smile. Breathe a sigh of relief. The asinine roller coaster of a year is over, and it ends on a high note as the Pittsburgh Penguins have claimed the fourth Stanley Cup in franchise history in the 2015-2016 year of Penguins hockey concludes with Lord Stanley returning to Pittsburgh as the Penguins are once again Stanley Cup champion. And as the Pittsburgh Penguins have officially claimed the NHL's version of a gold medal, I, one last time for this year, will bring you my version of gold, and that is radio gold. I am your host, Mike Osti, and this is the Pittsburgh Penguins 2016 Stanley Cup Championship edition of the wrap-up show here on Radio PI, the Penn Finisher Airwaves, and the Radio PI Podcast Network. And this gold-quality broadcast, as well as every gold-quality broadcast during the Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup Championship caliber season, was made possible and powered by Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractics and DKPittsburghSports.com. Really can't say it enough after what was, and asinine might not be the term, what was a really wild and bizarre season. There's been three other Stanley Cups in franchise history, many other Pittsburgh championships by other pro sports, the Pirates, Steelers. There's been titles around here in a city that refers to itself as the City of Champions. But I'm not sure if there's ever been a weirder way to win a championship, a more surprising championship, a more out-of-nowhere championship. And anyone new to the team may not expect that. They began the playoffs. They were one of the better teams. They have an all-star studded roster. And they went through the path and won the Stanley Cup. There were some hiccups there, but relatively handily. And with the path, they were clearly the best team in the field. And played the best hockey and won the championship decisively in terms of how dominant they were, even though it went six games against San Jose. But nobody would have expected this back December and January. They had to bring in Mike Sullivan. They win the Stanley Cup in his 6 months on the job, replacing Mike Johnston, who had only been there for a year and a quarter, but clearly wasn't getting it done. Mike Sullivan gets his first crack at Pittsburgh Penguin head coaching honors and wins a Stanley Cup, just like Bylsma did, replacing Therrien, but that was replacing a defending champion, a defending Eastern Conference champion team. They didn't win the Stanley Cup, but they were a defending champion of the conference. Sullivan replacing Mike Johnston, a team that was definitely floundering. They brought in Kessel, but he was underachieving. They have to make some midseason moves for Hagelin, Trevor Daley, integral players en route to the Cup run. Pascal Dupuis with his blood clot ailments, forcing his retirement. Matt Murray becoming the starter at the end of the year and then starting throughout the postseason run. Marc-Andre Fleury having a great year, a great couple years, but the team not able to do it for him when he was playing elite, and then him collapsing when he wasn't playing elite in past playoffs. He gets hurt before these playoffs. Everyone thinks, oh, that's the end of it. Ends up Matt Murray also getting hurt, but getting healthy enough to start midway through the first round series. Takes over, stands on his head. Fleury almost gets his job back, does not. Murray again stabilizes himself as the starter in the Eastern Conference Finals. Crosby, Malkin, they have all their critics. They struggle through the first couple rounds. Crosby gets three-game winners in the Eastern Conference Finals. Malkin may or may not have been hurt, but eventually finds his footing, finds his gallop in his step, and plays well en route to the championship. Phil Kessel is Mr. Clutch throughout the playoffs on all world level. The driving force of the best line, the third line being the Penguins' best line en route to the Cup, and gets a moniker after professional wrestling legend and Shawn Michaels calling it the HBK line. They face a franchise that had never been there before. San Jose getting the Cup final for the first time ever after 25 years. Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton, Hall of Famers, finally getting a crack to play for the Cup, but not able to hoist the Cup, not able to win that championship. The Penguins almost win on home ice, the fanfare, the double big screens, the jubilation, and the premature celebration of trying to do it at home, a Pittsburgh sports franchise trying to win at home for the first time since Mazeroski's homer in Game 7 of the World Series in 1960 over the Yankees. First time also for the Penguin franchise, obviously. They weren't able to do it. They have to win on the road again in Game 6 and so on and so forth. And we could keep on going on, and we will for the next hour, as the Pittsburgh Penguins, with all of that said, complete an asinine season and make it a memorable, special season as your 2016 Stanley Cup champions. As I said, I'm Mike Ostie, hosting you all the way through this wrap-up show. I will be joined alongside my co-host here with Radio PI and the Pens Initiative Airwaves and all the radio gold we put forth regular season with the credentialed media members covering this team and talking about the inner workings and drama of this team all year long. You got my hot takes. You got Nick's hot takes. Got all of our hot takes at PensInitiative.com. And also these post-game shows all through the postseason rounds 1-2, Eastern Conference Finals, and Stanley Cup Final, capping off with a Stanley Cup Championship. And without any further ado, and that is Nick, standing for Nick Case, my co-host here for this wrap-up show, as your Penguins are 2016 Stanley Cup champions. And Nick, before we get into all this and unpack this for the next hour plus, just give me your feelings. We touched on what your feelings could be on the post-game show after Game 5. We didn't do a post-game show after Game 6 because we really wanted to savor this moment. We were going to do this post-game show to really get our total thoughts and really appreciating what this is. So now that you've had a couple days and now we're in the wrap-up show, what are your thoughts? The Penguins are Stanley Cup champions again.
Part of it still hasn't really sunk in. I mean, it's not quite an out-of-body experience where you're there to witness it. You're there to see everything happen. And you know what's happening. But you're still waiting for that moment to where it clicks in and goes, oh, my God, it really happened. For all the excitement and for all of, you know, we in various states saw every single game of the series. You know, some, like me, had to watch it in passing while working, but we watched every game of this playoff run. But yet it still hasn't sunk in that they went ahead and they did the damn thing. There's a sense of surrealness that the season unfolded the way it did. And I think part of it is because we saw this exact script play out before in 2009. And for it to follow it basically the same timeline is just, it seems absurd that we could actually see that happen. Yet here we are, a repeat of history and the same result with a cup win. And it's crazy that it actually happened, but it happened.
Well, they did complete with the same result as the 2009 team, and this ends up being another Stanley Cup. And I think many of you, though, many out there are going to agree with you in terms of this being a little bit surreal, because unlike 2009, that was trying to go back to the finals and avenge the Red Wings and avenge the drama of Hossa and get back there and try to finish the job. Many people thought that team was going to go back to the finals. They were predicted to do that by many members of media, to go back to the finals. This was more of a surprise. I mean, a pleasant surprise. You like pleasant surprises, but this was more of a team that was supposed to be good and be a playoff team. But even going into the year, people thought, okay, once again, even with Kessel, it's a new big three. Instead of Neil, it's Kessel with Malkin and Crosby, same old. It'll be good. You'll get in the playoffs, and something will happen. Penguin fans, even though it's only been 6-7 years and it's not Cleveland or any of those curses, it's not Toronto and Buffalo and hockey, Penguin fans almost were acting like they had their own sports curse, where you're going to have talent, you're going to be good, but they're just not cats going to walk around the ice, something's going to go on, and somehow you're not going to win the Stanley Cup again. And then you had midseason, the feeling that turned into, man, not only are we cursed, we actually just suck. We're going to be a playoff team. We're actually a bad team. We're a member of the bottom half of the league. This is awful. And then all of a sudden, flip a switch, you bring in Sullivan, you make those midseason acquisitions, and then really, really quickly, people also start seeing, okay, the talent's there. We're seeing the change of the system. This team's getting really, really good. And then eventually, not only is this team now good and respectable again, and we're not embarrassed by them, but this team could do this. And then there's even some hesitation as you go through the playoffs. They're really, really good. They're playing well enough, but are they going to do this? Are they really going to do this? And then they did it. And you're still kind of left feeling it's surreal that they did the damn thing, as you said.
Having been there for a game, having followed everything closely on social media, every update, which was part of the interesting change from 7 years ago to now, is the prevalence of social media. Twitter was in its infancy. Facebook was around, but it wasn't there. And it really made you absorb this whole experience more and make you feel a little more inclusive and a little more part of it. You were a little more privy to the day-to-day, hour-to-hour swings, which I found really interesting, and really add another level of making you feel like you're a part of it. But even going through all that, even having witnessed it, even having been there for a game two, even having seen everything, it's still – you know what happened. You see them march off the plane with the cup. You hear about the parade for tomorrow. You know this happened, but you're still standing, running your hands through your head, going, wow, they actually did that? And it's going to take a while for this to really sink in. And like I said, a lot of it is the surrealism of the script playing out again. A lot of it is knowing how lost this team was, how they didn't have an identity. And even Matt Murray said in one of his NHL blogs that he was doing throughout the postseason, when Sullivan came in, they had no identity. They didn't know what kind of team they are. From seeing that team to seeing this team in a turnaround of five games when it took Sullivan, the time it took Sullivan to really implement his system, it is astounding to me that a team can go from night to day like that. And you asked the last show what was more impressive, this or Bielsma's turnaround, and I'm still not sure which is more impressive, but as I said then and I say it now, especially with Murray's comments, Zakhov's comments. I don't know if the coaching job was more impressive, but to take a team that had an identity that just wasn't playing its potential to the cup is impressive. But to see a team with no identity form one so quickly under a coach and win the cup is more impressive. Coaching job, I'm not sure, but the events around that and surrounding it, I've got to give it to this year as being far more impressive for that reason alone.
It still feels surreal, but they did it. They are the Stanley Cup champion. This cup is back, and it completed Act 9 concludes with a Stanley Cup. But Nick, everyone's been touching on it. We've been touching on it all season long. It wasn't easy to get here. It was controversial. There was drama, and the interesting point you make about social media being involved, even though the Penguins were favored going into 09, and even though the Penguins were thought to be able to do it all season long, even going into the Cup Final, they weren't favored to beat Detroit. They weren't favored certainly down in the series. They weren't favored even going on the road in Game 7. So we didn't have to deal, though, with the polarizing effect and the drama and even the down feelings for some of the Penguin fans on Twitter during that run, because social media and Twitter wasn't prevalent. I personally was not on Twitter then. I was still in college, didn't join Twitter until after graduating to help myself professionally. So I didn't get the day-to-day issues dealing with the buffoons and the Yinzers hot takes that we now have to have now in professional sports while covering sports and watching sports. So that does make it interesting. That does make it different. But they did it. They did the damn thing, the Stanley Cup champions. Now, Nick, I got to ask you this, and I'm going to ask it this way. Mike Sullivan took over midseason for Mike Johnston, had to implement a new system. It may or may not be more impressive than what Bielsma did for Michelle Therrien taking over for him in 09 and after his Eastern Conference championship and then winning the cup. It was a different situation. The team didn't just win a conference, but they were also floundering. Solomon takes over, puts in a new system. They win, and you notice a difference right away. But not only with him taking over, you bring in Trevor Daley, you bring in Hagelin. There were moves to be made even then to change the roster, not only just the system. And then you could also point to Phil Kessel in the offseason when Johnston was still there, bringing in a superstar who hadn't been on a winner, a guy who is hungry to play with other superstars and not just be the guy by himself, a guy that is prolific goal scorer, but maybe could be better served to be the number three, a guy who wanted that pressure off of him and then delivered and then some in the playoffs. Out of all of these nuances to lead to the Penguins winning the Stanley Cup, a relatively surprising Stanley Cup because of all of this, which one of those and which aspect of the Penguins season and a change was more impactful to winning this Stanley Cup? Sullivan taking over for Johnston, the midseason trades, or Kessel in the offseason?
I don't want to say this to disparage Phil Kessel, because enough people have done that, and it's wholly undeserved. Mm-hmm. But we had Phil Kessel for the first half of the year under Mike Johnston, and he wasn't Phil Kessel. And that is much more on Mike Johnston than it is Phil Kessel. So it's really tough to pick between Sullivan coming in or the midseason changes, because I feel like those two go hand in hand. You can bring in the midseason changes under Johnston and they don't perform as well. You can bring in Mike Sullivan and not have the midseason changes, and the result isn't really the same. But you're putting me on the spotlight here. You're making me choose one or the other, which is the entire point of this kind of thing. So I'm going to go ahead and barely edge out the midseason acquisitions and say Mike Sullivan, because he brought a cultural change too. For all of the talk of inmates running the asylum, which we may be seeing right now in Anaheim with reportedly the players asking for Randy Carlyle to be back, which what the hell? It was kind of like that in Pittsburgh. It was believed that Crosby's allegiance to Bylsma is what kept him around, and that's what kept Ray Sherrill around, and eventually they just said they kind of had enough. And, you know, the team was lost, and how much of it was the team just not really listening to someone like Mike Johnston, who we've talked about before was, sure, a fine coach at a certain level, but just went in way over his head. So Mike Sullivan came in there, and he instilled a system, and he instilled some discipline. You saw him early in the season curse at Evgeny Malkin, who was cursing at the refs, telling him to shut the up because he didn't want to hear him cursing at the refs and losing his cool. And it's no coincidence that this team really kind of went a lot more level-headed once Mike Sullivan came in. So just for that culture change alone, you can throw the records out the window because, as I said, I think the records – with the acquisitions go hand in hand with the hiring of Sullivan. But you saw a fundamental change in the players' personalities once Sullivan came in. And I think that's why he is the biggest change of this season compared to the past.
I'm right with you. And I honestly don't think it's that much of a debate. Phil Kessel is an all-world elite player. And we saw what he really can do in a clutch situation throughout the playoffs, but he wasn't at his best under Mike Johnston, so that eliminates that. You need system change to help Phil Kessel. Maybe it was even the maturation process of being on a new team, but Mike Sullivan getting there certainly ignited Phil Kessel. And then also, you add those midseason acquisitions, and not to understate them at all, because you can't just rely solely on Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, and even a goaltender, Letang too, in defense. You need a whole team of depth. You need bottom six. You need an entire team, rolling four lines, and depth. That's what they didn't have the past 5-6 years since 09, and now they have, which is why they're Stanley Cup champions. That's Trevor Daley. That's Hagelin. They beefed that up. They really ignited that part of the team for depth, and they were a part of some of the best Penguin moments throughout the playoffs, Hagelin being a part of the best Penguin line throughout the postseason. But would they have been able to do that under the system of Mike Johnston that wasn't really an offensive system, that was more of a defensive system, which is not what the roster had and certainly wouldn't have been what the roster had even with those additions which they also might not have made with Johnston because they might not have fit his system. They fit perfectly with Mike Sullivan. He needed to put his new system in. And more importantly than the X's and O's, Mike Sullivan really set the tone. I'm not going to take any crap. I'm the new sheriff in town. I know some of you feel like you're superstars. Some of you got these resumes, and some of you have won before, but it's been a while for all of you, and this is how we're going to do it. You've not been getting it done under Mike Johnston. We need a change. You may disagree. You may agree, but oh well, this is how it is. And his system catered to the players that even though it was a new sheriff in town, they actually liked his system because it was what they wanted to do. He became a disciplinarian who also was popular among players. It's very rare to see a player's coach be a disciplinarian. It's also very rare to see a disciplinarian be popular among players. But Sullivan walked that wire where he was popular among players. They liked playing his system, but he also wasn't going to take any lip and was also a disciplinarian. It was incredible. He had the perfect storm. Now, if he can do that for the next 5-10 years, we don't know, but in his whole Penguin tenure, which hopefully is that long, but certainly for that 6-month period, he did, and this team was eventually able to win the Stanley Cup. I guess we'll retouch on that briefly. You're still clinging to the fact that you believe Bylsma's 09 Cup was more impressive as a coaching job than what Mike Sullivan did, even though that was the defending conference champion and arguably a better team in terms of how they were playing, even though on paper this is a better team. Do you still go Bylsma, or is it closer now to lean towards Sullivan because he did have to provide an entire cultural change that Bylsma maybe didn't have to do?
I still say it goes to Bylsma simply because they were there the year before, sure, but there was some turnover on that team. They lost some top forwards in Marinosa and Ryan Malone. They lost a big, some big locker room influences in Gary Roberts and even George LaRocque to an extent, who, by all intents and purposes, was really liked in that locker room. And they were floundering bad. They had some rough injuries. Gonchar was hurt for a while. Ryan Whitney was starting his injury problem. And so to see, and once again, it's a nice melding of midseason acquisitions with the acquisition of Chris Kunitz for Ryan Whitney, the bringing in of Bill Guerin, the return of Sergei Gonchar from injury, combining with Bylsma bringing in his up-tempo team. But still, when you look at the pieces of that team compared to the year before, there's a drop-off there. And that team gelled and became a team at the right time. Same with this team. I mean, this was the definition of a team. No Crosby leading the way, no Malkin leading the way. Phil Kessel led the way, but Crosby, Malkin, Letang were all right behind him. Matt Murray did his part, too, to be right behind him. But that team was, in 2009, was the definition of some greater than their parts. This team was just so loaded and stacked that once they found themselves, it's not a surprise that this happened. The Cup was still surprising. But it's not surprising that once they found their identity and found their way, they went off and ran the gamut. When you have Phil Kessel, when you have Chris Letang, when you have Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby, it really isn't surprising that they can do something like this.
Kessel's on your third line. Think of that.
Yeah,
Phil Kessel is leading your third line. This guy would be on the first line of every other team, including teams that were in the playoffs, and you could argue San Jose Sharks would put him on the first line.
And you look at the team that lost, who were Malkin's wingers most of the time? Max Talbot, Ruslan Fedotenko. You had a good third line with Kennedy and Talbot, or not Talbot, pardon, Kennedy, Cook, and Stahl, but Crosby's wingers were Kunitz and Guerin. These are guys that are not lighting the world on fire, but everything came together perfectly. The stars aligned there. And so for that, I think that team is still more impressive just for the feat that they accomplished. And that you could easily say, outside of maybe Carolina, that is the weakest team in the salary cap era to have won a cup. But what matters is they won. This had star power up and down the lineup. It's hard to argue that these guys aren't one of the better teams to win the cup in the salary cap era. And so that's why I just find what happened in 2009 to be more impressive than this. But it's not by much.
You could look at it that way, and in terms of on paper, this Penguin team is better than 09 on paper, and you could even put it up against teams of 91-92 on paper, because this team on paper, when you add Phil Kessel, you could even maybe argue that the surprise really was the disappointment of this team the past few years with all the stars they had. And then you bring in Phil Kessel to add to that. On paper, this team should have been a contender, should have been a cup team, but just wasn't playing like that, and the system wasn't dictating that, so nobody believed in it, and eventually they turned around and did it. 09 was more of a team that was a full team to the sense of the term, granted a defending champion. I'm still liking the lean to Falvin because of having to change the culture, because it wasn't a defending champion, even though the team was better on paper, but they just weren't playing like it, and he had to do so much change to get them to play like it. But I certainly hear you that Bylsma, granted, it says he took over a defending conference champion. They weren't really that, because they did lose some pieces, granted, not the two best pieces. And with the landscape of the league at that time, you could maybe argue the field was tougher in that particular playoffs in the conference than it was this year. Granted, the Capitals and some teams were good, but the Penguins didn't have a rocky road per se once you eliminate Washington. And some injuries like Stamkos with Tampa Bay. I don't know. It's certainly a interesting debate that really is an irrelevant debate, because they're both Stanley Cup champions. As you said, they're both going to be remembered as Stanley Cup champions forever. Those players on either one of those two teams live forever. Some players on both teams get to live twice in eternity. And the rings for both those two teams are flashing and are blinging themselves. Granted, this ring I'm sure will bling even more, since rings for championships in 2016 and so on just keep on adding diamonds to where they were a half decade and a decade plus ago. But not only that, this Penguin team, I think in the Bylsma argument and the 09 team argument for more impressive, this Penguin team, Nick, once they got into the playoffs, we didn't expect this in December and January. Everyone was hating on them then. That's why we say it's a surprise asinine championship. But once they got into the playoffs and you saw, okay, the Rangers might be weaker. Their window's closed. Lundqvist is older, not playing that well. The Capitals have never done it before with this group. They're good, but we don't know. We know Stamkos is also injured. He has the blood clot issue. Will he even play? That's a huge hit for Tampa Bay. The Red Wings are aging. The Islanders might not be ready. There were so many question marks around every other team, but that's why so many people said to themselves, the Penguins could do this. We know they haven't been the last few years, but they could do this because they're just as talented as everybody else, if not more, and there's actually less question marks on them than everybody else. And then once they got through the Rangers, you're saying, well, the Capitals could beat them. They're really, really good. Ovechkin and the Capitals having maybe the best year they've ever had together. But if the Penguins would hypothetically beat them, and they could, then they got a really favorable road, and you then get to the conference final and say, well, Tampa Bay is the defending conference champion, but they're a little bit riddled. They're doing this as more of a surprise because they don't have Stamkos. The Penguins should be favored there. Then you go to the cup final. San Jose's never been there. They're really, really good, but they're not as deep as the Penguins, you wouldn't figure. And once you get to that point, the Penguins you maybe are favored again because of how deep, how well they were playing, and how they have gotten to that point. So in the playoffs, the Penguins are more of a favorite team expected to do once they got into the playoffs based on the landscape than say the 09 team was. That 09 team, even many people thought, okay, they could win the East and go back to the cup final. But I think most people probably would have thought of that era of Penguins hockey as more of say a early 2000s New Jersey Nets for the NBA, where, or even the late 90s Utah Jazz, where you had a couple superstars, but you just couldn't knock down your older brother. You were second best, and that's just what you could hope for. I don't think many people thought the Red Wings were going to lose to the Penguins, and the Red Wings are probably going to win back-to-back, beating the Penguins both cups, and the Penguins would lose both years. Maybe get there, but lose both years. Then they did it, and they won, and they beat the Red Wings and really changed the course of that franchise and beat the success that has been the Red Wings. When they get there, they usually don't lose. And then not only did they do that, but they had to do it on the road in a game seven. So not only are the underdog going into the series, but then you're the underdog within the series, trailing in the series, and then on the road in game seven. So it was more impressive overall as a team. I don't know about coaching job, but this team, I feel like was the better team in terms of the dominance of the field. Now, I will pivot that into this question that everybody's going to ask. It might make you roll your eyes because it's not a question that we're ever going to be able to have answered, and it's more of a video game question, but it exists when you have multiple championships in one franchise. 91, 92, all those Hall of Famers, they went back-to-back. 2009, they got retribution for 08 and losing in the final. They had younger stars, more of a team around them. 09, a stacked roster, finally bucking the trend of recent disappointments, a new coach, a new system, but dominating the field at times, getting over struggles at other times, and all the drama they dealt with. Those four, who is the better cup champion in Penguin history? Who is maybe the most impressive cup champion in Penguin history? Who is the cup champion that you hold in most special regard for yourself in Penguin history? There's four cups in the Pittsburgh Penguin franchise history now. They're all wonderful, but which one separates more than the rest?
As far as best, I got to go 92. Or was it 91? I unfortunately am slipping on my Penguins floor right now. The year they swept Chicago, I believe it was 92.
That was 92.
Yeah.
The second one.
Yeah, because to sweep anybody in any series is impressive, but to do it in the cup final with everything on the line and knowing that the other team just has no answer to steamroll them, you don't see that often. Even, I think the last time that happened was 96, 97, somewhere in there, Red Wings against the Capitals. They were swept. And that's the last
Well, the Red Wings swept both. The 97, 98 Red Wings, both they swept both teams. They swept the Flyers and the Capitals. They won eight,
eight
in a row. They just destroyed everybody.
Jeez. Yeah, and you know, you saw it three times in the 90s, but since then you haven't seen it. Even the lesser teams have gotten at least one game. I remember Carolina trapping their way to at least one overtime win against the Red Wings in 2000,
yeah.
In 2002, I believe.
They won game one. They won the first game.
Yeah, that's right. And Ron Francis scored the game-winning goal. I mean, it's really rare to get a sweep. So to just steamroll an opponent, especially in such a big stage, 92 to me is the best. And I think people would remember 92 a lot better, too, if 93 had gone on and won, just to continue that kind of dynastic feeling. But unfortunately, we know
three in a row would have been ridiculous.
Yeah, but, yeah, we all know how that ended. But as far as the one that's special to me, it's got to be this one. And it's for reasons I've outlined in the past and will always carry with me. It's not just because they came out of nowhere and won in such an unpredictable manner, and not just because they did it in such a way that, you know, they looked so down and out, and they came back and ended up winning the whole thing. Just the fact that I was able to make it more personal by being there for game two, that on that same trip I got engaged. And then they put, like, a great period exclamation point at the end of that sentence by winning the cup. For me personally, this is the one I'll always remember the most. I still remember where I was in 2009. I was with three people, Brittany and Brett, at a bar that doesn't exist anymore in Charleston. We were watching it together.
Okay.
But I'll always remember this one most of all. I was too young for 91 and 92. I was aware that it was happening, but I wasn't, like, conscious of it. So those ones are unfortunately out of the equation for me. But I know well enough to know that 92 team was just special. So that's why, to me, they're the most dominant, but the one I'll remember most is easily this one.
92 is by far the best team for me. It's a dominating performance in a cup final over what needs to be said, not only a Blackhawk franchise that was hungry to break a drought of their own, and they would later not break that drought for another two decades, but Chris Chelios was on that Blackhawks team. He's one of the best defensemen in NHL history. Belfour was a goaltender on that Blackhawk team. Dominic Hasek was the backup goaltender on that Blackhawk team that nobody talks of. I mean, Dominic Hasek was the MF and backup on that Blackhawk team. And actually, maybe the Penguins beating them did him a favor to get him the hell out of there and go ahead and win six Vezinas. But that was a good
Buffalo. So did it really do him a favor?
Well, he won six Vezinas, and then he eventually, by getting to Buffalo, the Penguins actually really did Hasek a favor his whole career. By beating him in Chicago, it got him to Buffalo, but then by Casper Edge's game winner in Buffalo, he got pissed off to management, and then that got him to Detroit, and he won a cup. So, the Penguins really owe something to Pittsburgh.
Didn't he win that cup? And he won that cup or at least one of those cups against Pittsburgh. So yeah, he really has Pittsburgh to thank for a lot of his career.
Yeah, he won one of his two cups against Pittsburgh, even though he ended up losing his starting job that year. And in 2002, he beat the Canes, as we already mentioned, despite losing game one. Dominic Costa goes the gift basket to the Penguin franchise at the very least. But they beat that Blackhawk team, and the 92 Penguins beat that Blackhawk team with Chelios, Hasek, Belfour, and Jeremy Roenick. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's already four Hall of Famers, and that's not even who else is on that team. That was a very good Blackhawk team. The Penguins steamrolled. They were defending cup champions, so they were expected to do it, which is easier said than done. They had that pressure. You had Hall of Famers, Lemieux, Gauger, Francis, etc. And the 91 team, I will say, actually, I could argue, is more impressive and more surprising than even the 09 team. The 09 team was different than the recent year of 08, where they were defending conference champion, and they had to do a lot of impressive things to get back and then win against the great Detroit team. But 91 was the Penguins doing it out of nowhere. They were really, really good. Some thought they could, but the Penguin franchise was a relatively losing franchise until Lemieux got there in the draft in the mid-80s. They weren't even a contender. He made them a contender, but they were still losing playoff seasons. They were more of what the Capitals are now, where they couldn't really go deep. It was one guy and a cast of characters, and then they got guys around him. You draft Jágr, you immediately see that Jágr is a phenomenal future legend in this game, even in his rookie year. And he takes over and helps the team. And the specialness of Badger Bob is passing away and all that makes it special. But like you, I'm younger than you. I can't really remember that vividly, so it can't be special to me personally. But I think it is more impressive and more surprising overall out of the four cups, 92 being the best team. And then 2016 is the most special. I remember 09. I was in college. I came back to Pittsburgh to enjoy it, as I just went to WVU an hour and a half south of Pittsburgh, so I was able to come back here. But 2016, I'm living in Pittsburgh. I'm working in Pittsburgh. I'm covering this campaign all the way through for Penn's Initiative. I'm really close, keeping even more tabs than I did in the past. And as we both continuously kept expressing through the playoff run on these airwaves, this is an important Stanley Cup, maybe right up there with the 91 Cup to finally do it, because this fan base was getting rabid. They were getting negative. It wasn't fun anymore. They were hating the team. They were hating the players. It was very polarizing. The media was hating the players, hating the team. They really needed to do this again now to save the fun and bring the fun back to Pittsburgh Penguin hockey, and they do it with an exclamation point by being Stanley Cup champion, ushering out the country club atmosphere and the negativity that had been there since 09. This is special to me for all of those reasons, really saving the fan base for the Penguins. But I don't think any of these teams, even if Crosby and Malkin do it again in this era, even if they repeat next year, it's going to be hard-pressed to be better than 92. 92, Reggie, is one of the best teams in NHL history in terms of all those great teams through all the many, many years, and there's been some of them, and I'm not saying it's the very best team, but it's in that conversation with all those Hall of Famers on that team and how well they played throughout the whole season and then how dominating they were in the postseason. But I don't want to disrespect 2009 because I liked it, but special, this one, impressive 91, and then 92 being the best team. Now, Nick, what would make this an argument for being the new best team is if they would do it again. They would have the pressure. They would have the roster. It wouldn't be asinine anymore. They would deliver, and they would do it again with a three-headed monster plus Crosby, Kessel, Malkin, Letang, Murray now as the prohibited starter, doing it again for a full year of dominance like in 92, capping off from 91 surprise. So can they do what 92 did? Can this Pittsburgh Penguin team repeat and win the 2017 Stanley Cup?
I think the odds are pretty good. I think you have to factor in a few possibilities, and that's what happens to Fleury, what happens to Murray. And I think that is one of the key questions that really factors into this answer, because you look at the salary cap, Mata's contract kicks in next year, so that's an extra $3 million off the cap. outside of that, they're returning the same players. Lovejoy's probably gone, and Matt Cullen is still a question mark. You can easily insert Oscar Sundquist into Cullen's spot if he decides to retire, and you're not missing anything. Cullen was great this year, but what are the odds that happens next year? He's 39 years old. He wasn't ready to answer about retirement yet, which that's fair. That's fine, but that's easy to replace. You want to lose Ben Lovejoy, that's fine. Benny played his best hockey when it mattered most, and it was, you know, for as much as everybody somewhat rightfully slammed that move to trade him for Dupre, in the end it paid off. Nobody expected that, but it paid off. But if Justin Schultz wants to play ball and negotiate a nice contract, he can fill in to his spot really nicely, and you don't really miss a beat. Kunitz is getting older, which is a concern. You know, but outside of that, I there aren't a lot of holes. You can swap in people and mix around, and you're fine. They can do this again next year. It's just a matter of if they split time, can Fleury and Murray find their levels when they're not the guy? Even if it's a 60-40 split, you're not getting the time that a starting goalie wants to really find his groove and his rhythm. If you trade Fleury and keep Murray, or as the AP announced that it looks like the NHL will expand to Vegas, if you lose Fleury in the expansion draft, can Murray carry the load? I have questions about that. He's talented. That's not a question. It's longevity. Sure, he's performed at length in the AHL and in college, where he was mostly a backup but had a few seasons at starter, or not college, but, you know, in the majors, major, you know, then, you know, those leagues. But
yes.
Can he do that in the NHL? We've seen holes. We've seen him possibly wear down. How much of that is just being young and can be fixed? How much of that is, as we've mentioned before, the concern of him becoming Jim Carrey? So optimally, you keep a bridge deal. But if you have them and they coexist well, if you get rid of Fleury and Murray proves to be what he can be, I like their chances of repeating. But it's also really hard. There's a reason why those Red Wing teams you mentioned in 97-98 were the last ones to repeat. Because I believe that's correct. If not, it was the early 2000s, maybe 2000.
No, that's right. That's right.
2002, 2003, yeah. Either way, there's a reason why it's been...
No, the 97-98 Red Wings are the last ones to repeat.
Yeah.
You were correct the first time.
Yeah. Either way, there's a reason why it's been umpteen to 20 years since there's been a repeat champion. It's really hard. A lot went right for the Penguins this year, and we've seen what happens when they don't go right for the Penguins. That said, perfect world, I can see it happening without a problem, but it's not a perfect world. So I like their odds, just to get back to your point. I like their odds when the odds are against them.
Anyone listening to this show who necessarily does not know hockey history may be raising their eyebrows. What do you mean? He's going to become Jim Carrey? He's going to become a famous comedian? And
he's going to be smoking. Yeah.
he will, yes. He will start talking out of his butt, and he will then appear in serious movies replacing the legend that is Andy
Bagel.
Kaufman.
Bagel, huh? Well, see you later.
Yeah. As I'm looking at in my autographed picture of Jim Carrey, too, that reads, thank you very much, and thank you very much to Pittsburgh Penguin fans for supporting this Penguin team through these many, many years of the flop since 09 as they once again become Stanley Cup champions. It's going to be tough. There has not been a team to repeat a Stanley Cup champion since the 97-98 Red Wings, which are a little bit different than this Penguin team. As good as this Penguin team is, those 97-98 Red Wing teams are just unreasonably good. I mean, that was the Russian Five, and all five of those Russians were not the best player on those Red Wing teams. That's how freaking good they were. They were ridiculous. And they, ironically, had two different starting goaltenders. So I don't know what that could mean for the future here. But those 97-98 Red Wing teams were just ridiculously talented. They were very, very deep. That was Scotty Bowman, a legend in this game. There's Hall of Famer galore on those teams. They would not get another one until 02. But they almost repeated. Actually, this question would be a lot more recent if the Penguins didn't win that game 7-0 on the road. The 2008-2009 Red Wings almost went back-to-back again. But, of course, the Penguins won that game 7 to stop that. And that even proves the point of what we're saying. The Red Wings almost went back-to-back in 08-09. They were very, very good and good enough to do so. But the stars aligned for Pittsburgh to win a game 7 on the road. they had to win a game seven on the road to stop Detroit from going back-to-back and beating them twice in a row. So it's tough to go back-to-back in any pro sport. And many dynasties out there, the Spurs in basketball, they never have gone back-to-back. Going back-to-back is just tough. No one has done so in hockey since 97-98 with Detroit. I'm tempted to bet against it just because of that fact, despite the Penguins being very, very good. But with the landscape around them, a lot of other normal powerhouses fading out with a lot of question marks, teams like the Rangers, Boston, et cetera, Montreal, younger teams, maybe the Islanders, Tampa Bay, who is still going to be around depending on what happens with Stamkos, they're going to get good or get better, and they could still eventually do it. The Capitals are always that question mark. Are they ever going to finish the job with Alexander Ovechkin and at least make a conference final? They're talented enough to do it, but the Penguins are that team that, when and out, they're going to be the favorite. They have the team. They have the horses. They're good enough. They have more confidence now. They believe in themselves more now, and it very well could have history repeat itself, 91-92, 2016, 2017. But, Nick, almost all of us probably, if we really admit in our heart of hearts, after they won in 09, many people thought Crosby and Malkin would get another one, and do it relatively quickly. They won in the early 20s before even they were supposed to, so they put a lot of pressure on themselves. But I doubt many people thought it would be another 7 years before they win again, and all those playoff disappointments, just how talented and young they were, and they didn't do it again. It took until this team, most made up of players who were not on the 09 team or didn't play that much for the 09 team. So it's a while then, and when it, going back-to-back is so tough. If I had to put money down, I'd bet against it, but they absolutely are good enough to do it, and the window is wide open. Even if they don't go back-to-back, they could easily pull a Chicago Blackhawks, Nick. They never went back-to-back either, but Kane and Taves and Hossa, et cetera, got three in 6 years. They don't go back-to-back, they could win the next year, the year after that, year after that. Doesn't have to be necessarily back-to-back to get another one for these guys.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say I haven't learned a lesson from what we've learned over the past 7 years, but with this core, I could see them winning one, at least one more in the next 4 years. Now, that's assuming that the console curse is lifted, that nobody's ACL is torn funny, and you know, Mike Sullivan doesn't have his carriage turned back into a pumpkin like we've had in the past, and no concussions. But it's something I'm writing about actually today, and that'll get published either today or tomorrow. This team feels
all right.
Different because, yes, because in the past it there was kind of an entitlement. It was, we're finally here, now we're not going to let it go because this is where we belong. You know, in 08 they lost, in 09 they went back to win what they felt was rightfully theirs. And through the years they kind of got bumped down, they got knocked around, and it kind of took them sinking to the lowest point, to, like you said, where fans were turning on them, the media was turning on them. To kind of, not to, I don't know about realize that they need to change or anything like that, but it made them appreciate it more. It made them, to me as a fan, it feels like they earned this more than they felt like they belonged here. And I think that can play a part too. They've really learned to appreciate that this isn't a given. This isn't something that happens every year, and that they really, it's something they earn, and it's something that they're really geared toward now. And there's a talent around them, which is a big help too, mind you. I think that 2013 team just was one or two pieces away that got swept by Boston. They could have been there before. That 2002 team or 2012 team possibly could have. So it's not like they never had a chance or whatever, but I feel like this team is mentally in a different place to where they don't feel like they deserve it, to where they feel like they're ready to earn it and they're ready to do what's necessary for it. That's not to say they were mailing it in before, but there's just a different element to this team.
I think they're primed to go on
deep runs repeatedly for the next couple years to where they can easily get at least one more.
It's just so tough to go back-to-back because even to win multiple and then do a Chicago Blackhawks or LA Kings and win multiple in a 5 or 6 year period, you got to give them credit for doing it because it's just so, so tough to do it again with everybody having the bullseye on you. Yes, you're talented and you're better than other teams and you could easily win, but you have to be healthy. You have to have injuries not occur. You have to have the pieces stay in place. You have to deal with free agency. You have to deal with drama. You have to deal with just so much that could go on. You just never know. I mean, I'm sure the Lightning feel like they would be back in the Cup final and maybe could have won a Cup themselves if Stamkos was fully healthy. I'm sure they probably feel like that. That's a fan base you probably can argue has an excuse because their Sidney Crosby wasn't there for 6 of the 7 games. They probably feel if he was there, they would have won the Eastern Conference final. And maybe they would have. But you got to be healthy. That's part of it. Got to be good enough, lucky enough, and healthy enough to win a championship. Nick Case, Mike Ossie, this is the Radio PI Pens Initiative wrap-up show. 2015-2016 year of Penguins hockey ends in a 4th Stanley Cup for the franchise. Nick, as we move through this, there's 3 things I want to touch on before we close the books on the Radio Gold of this year for the Penguins. Sidney Crosby won the Conn Smythe. He is that elite guy now to win a World Junior, World Championship, Stanley Cup, Olympic gold medal, multiple with Team Canada, multiple Stanley Cups too, Art Ross Trophy for the scoring race, MVP, and the Conn Smythe. He's the only guy to win all of those. There are some that have won most. Some have won all but one. He's the only one to win all of them, the last one being the Conn Smythe for playoff MVP. He had a good playoff run. It wasn't even what he did in 09 when Malkin won the Conn Smythe for even giving more than he gave. Crosby was okay in the first and second round, helped the team. Third round, conference final, 3 game winners, Cup final, integral force, but wasn't able to score as many goals, impacted the game with his offense, and he's the best player in the world. But Phil Kessel really was great as well, and I think even greater throughout all 4 rounds, the driving force for the Penguins' best line through rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4. Didn't score the goals in the Cup final, but it is playoff MVP. He had the stats and had more goals than Crosby through all 4 rounds. Did Phil Kessel get screwed out of the Conn Smythe?
Man, I don't know that he got screwed out of it. I said during Game 6, if either Crosby or Kessel scored a goal, that would have wrapped it up for either one, I believe. Neither did, but Sid had the most impact on that game. Kessel obviously had some great opportunities that were stopped through no power of his own. But when you're just, I don't know, it's, you know as well as I do that some of these guys that are in the big media just kind of mail it in. They look at the storylines, and they have biases. So
Were some
of these voters just swayed by Phil Kessel because he's Phil Kessel? Yeah, sure. But fair or not, in that final game when it mattered, when ballots were due with 10 minutes left, Crosby had produced more. Now, Phil scores that that showstopper one-timer from Chris Kunitz to put the Penguins up 3-1. It might be Phil's very easily. But I think given some questionable nebulous of ideas of Phil Kessel in the media and the fact that he quote-unquote didn't appear in the final game, which he appeared, just not on the score sheet, I think that's why Sid was named. Do I think it's some travesty? Do I think that there's a very convincing argument for Kessel? Yeah. Do I think either of them really care? No. And to me, that's the most important thing. I think they're just happy to win at the end of the day. But it also would have been very satisfying to see people like Steve Simmons shut up by the fact that Phil Kessel not only leaves and wins the Cup right away, but is the most valuable player of the playoffs. But if I just don't get that little bit of schadenfreude and everything else is kosher, I'm fine personally. What about you? Do you think Kessel was screwed out of it?
Well, the guy who cares the least about whether he got screwed out of it is probably Phil Kessel. I mean, Phil Kessel was elated to get out of Toronto, whether he says it or not. He got to be on a good team. He got to win a cup. You can just see his expression with his mouth hanging wide open in all these pictures that Phil Kessel is happy to win a Stanley Cup, be a Stanley Cup champion, and doesn't give a damn about individual awards. However, I do, to play devil's advocate here, I do believe Phil Kessel got screwed out of the Conn Smythe. Phil Kessel was so great through these 4 rounds, and so was Crosby. But for the people that say Crosby's still giving you an impact, and you have to analyze with a keen hockey eye that he can give an impact even when not scoring goals, absolutely true. Sidney Crosby played fine through these 4 rounds, and he was impacting games and playing well even when he wasn't scoring goals and getting points. It takes a strict, keen hockey eye to be able to analyze a star player who can play well without necessarily scoring. I know that. I agree with that. But then why would that hurt Phil Kessel in the cup final? It's for all four rounds. He actually was producing the same goal scoring pace as Sidney Crosby, as well as points for most of the playoffs. But if you put points and goals away, you can impact the game without worrying about stats. Phil Kessel, to me, was more of a driving force consistently through all four rounds, rounds one, two, three, and four, to lead the Penguins' offense, in particular their best line, throughout all four of the playoffs, four rounds of the playoffs, to win the Stanley Cup, and played well in the Cup final, even though he didn't score a goal. For me, Crosby was maybe the better player for the Eastern Conference final and Stanley Cup final together combined. But I think Phil Kessel was better from rounds one, two, three, and four together, including playing well in rounds three and the Cup final, and should have won the Conn Smythe, since it is playoff MVP and it is not a series MVP. It is not Cup final MVP. It is for all four rounds, which people lose sight of. And I do believe the Canadian influence of the media, which had some votes, if not all, most of the votes, not all, but most of the votes, that hurt Phil Kessel, that they wanted to give it to Crosby more than Kessel. And separate from that, I also do believe, to simplify this, Nick, that like when Eli Manning won a Super Bowl MVP, he won two Super Bowl MVPs in his two rings. His second Super Bowl MVP, he had a good game, but he threw an interception, only threw for about 200 yards. It wasn't an all-world game. He won Super Bowl MVP, but it could have went to several others. When in doubt in football for Super Bowl MVP, if the quarterback plays okay, plays well enough, plays good enough, even if he's not the best player in the game, they give it to the quarterback because they know how tough the position is and he's a leader of the team. So when in doubt, they give a quarterback a Super Bowl MVP when his team wins a Super Bowl. And that kind of happened here where you and I are grasping at straws. Everybody's kind of nitpicking. Crosby could have got Conn Smythe. Kessel could have got Conn Smythe. Hell, Murray had a case probably late, up until late of the Cup final. It could have went to any of them. None of them had the Malkin 09, almost 40-point playoff season. It was all a relatively team effort despite all being stars. And when in doubt, they went with the captain. They went with the Hall of Famer. They went with Sidney Crosby, the best in the world. It was a tie, and when in doubt, they went Crosby, either from a bias or just for the fact that when in doubt, you're going to go Crosby over anybody else, including Kessel. But I would have liked to have seen Kessel. I would have voted for Kessel.
Yeah, when in doubt, you go with the quarterback and went to Super Bowl 43, then for some reason you give it to the wide receiver. But
right.
But I saw somebody kind of say this is a lifetime achievement award for Sid, and I can kind of get behind that. Yeah, you know, it's the guy – has been through a lot. Granted, Phil Kessel is a cancer survivor.
I wouldn't have voted
that way,
though. I kind of hate that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it, but I wouldn't have voted for that way. I want it to be individual each year. I hate the Lifetime Achievement Awards for MVPs, but they do occur.
Oh, I agree. It's why in the past couple of years, Steph Curry aside, you've seen people other than LeBron win the MVP. It's because, well, these guys have been good and are tired of voting for this person, so we're going to vote for somebody else instead.
Yeah.
But I can kind of agree that it's a lifetime achievement thing. Not that he wasn't deserving of it, but I feel like if the same situation happens next year, carbon copy, points-wise, contribution-wise, Pens win again, I feel like it'd be Kessel's time. I think they wanted to give it to Sid as a show of thanks, as a show of you've earned this, as a show of recognition for how he's changed his approach and what he's done. And it's not far off base. But it would have been nice to see Kessel do it because, as you said, he did was the driving force behind Moore even when it didn't capitalize. Sid was not in existence for the Capitals series, and that's a big knock. Kessel was his line was the driving force for that series.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with the vote, but I definitely would have gone Kessel if I had been given a vote.
It also could be that they didn't want to have the oddity and have that weird feeling and trivia question out there for the future of Sidney Crosby wins two cups in three cup finals and doesn't win a Conn Smythe even once. That would have left maybe that bitter taste in your mouth for his legacy, which it would have been ridiculous to criticize still, but they wanted to put that to bed, and so they did, and when in doubt, they went Crosby, who played good throughout the playoffs, but I think Kessel played better, and that was the best team they faced, arguably, in the conference. Ovechkin outplayed Crosby, to be fair. Ovechkin had a better second-round series than Crosby did, But because of Kessel, because of Murray, because of the overall team, the Penguins were able to win. They had a better team than the Capitals did. And Kessel was a big part of that, more so than Crosby. But Crosby, three-game winners in the conference final, really helped him. He picked up his game and got big moments later on in the playoffs, which is what people are going to remember. Nick, as we're getting towards the end here, what do you do with Fleury? What do you think happens with Fleury?
As I said, ideal world, you keep a bridge here. you sit Fleury down. I saw someone else say this, so I'm not going to take credit, but it's a good idea. You sit Fleury down, and you say, you lost your job because of an injury. Matt Murray, comes down with an injury. Guess what? You're our guy again. Don't fret. In the meantime, you guys are going to near split starts because we need to make sure that we can keep him, and if not, you're our guy again. Give us a year, and we'll figure it out. Ideally, that works out for everyone. The odds of that happening, I don't know, but that's the ideal world that I'd like to live in. Throw in a couple of wrinkles, does Fleury want to do that? Because he looked like a pretty despondent man for having just won a championship during that celebration. He gave a very half-assed cup raise, as if to say, yeah, I didn't really earn this. And I don't know how much of that is him saying, I didn't earn this, but whatever. How much of it is him saying, yeah, I'm ready to move on with my life. So, you know, I know Mark Madden has said that Fleury's agent is upset and has demanded a trade. Is that true? We don't know. The expansion is coming. Will that affect Fleury? We don't know. I am concerned about going in full force on Matt Murray right now. I would like something like you've had in the past with a very capable person that can step in and start games, the majority of games if necessary, like a Brent Johnston did. That is my plan B. But what's out there that won't eat your cap up the same way Fleury is eating the cap and necessitating the need to get rid of him? To me, the worst proposition is going all in on Murray, and that's just because he's a question mark. But in a cap world, it may just be what you have to do. Do I like the likelihood of him becoming a franchise guy? Yeah. But there is always that possibility that he won't get the job done because he was insulated down the stretch. He made big saves when he needed to, but they did their best to make sure he didn't face a lot of shots. So after his stellar performance against Washington, he dropped off a little bit. He was still performing at a fine level. But how much of that was fatigue, how much of that was crack showing, and how much of that was just a fluke? We don't know. And so to go into him full bore on a contender, it concerns me. So if possible, I keep Fleury for a year, then figure it out, let Murray figure it out, answer some questions, and then say, all right, Mark, we know where this is going. Where do you want to go? Will Fleury allow that? Will expansion allow that? We don't know. If that's the way it goes, we got to hope Murray is ready to take hold and run the ship for the entire season. If not, we got to invest in a good backup just to be safe.
In a dream world, in an ideal world, you'd have a 1A, 1B scenario with Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. You have a young 22-year-old Stanley Cup champion in Matt Murray, and then a Stanley Cup champion as a starter and now as a backup veteran 300-plus game winner in this league, Marc-Andre Fleury, to be that 1B, and to basically give them almost around the same amount of starts, where Fleury is still going to get you almost 40 starts throughout a season, and then after a year, you revisit, or maybe Fleury has reclaimed the job due to an injury or something else. We just don't know. Ideally, you have both of them because, again, we're not sure on the future for the whole career of Matt Murray. We've seen players in all sports have great individual postseasons and not do the same the next year and not have a career that's going to put them in the Hall of Fame. They just have one individual postseason. I'm not saying that's Matt Murray, but it could be. We don't know. And also, Nick, Cam Ward won a Stanley Cup as a rookie. He's had a stellar career since. But I wouldn't say Cam Ward's entire career is as good as Marc-Andre Fleury's career. If you get Cam Ward with Matt Murray, that's fine for the next decade. But it's still not what you had with Marc-Andre Fleury in terms of overall wins and a Hall of Fame-type resume. Even though he has all those critics and Fleury maybe is overrated at times, he has that resume that could garner enshrinement. You don't know if Murray's going to give you that. I can't say Cam Ward has provided that since he won a cup as a rookie. So I'd like to have them both. I'd like to have them both as a security blanket since we want to have a bridge to Murray, and we're just not sure about the longevity of him off of just 2 months of hockey. However, and I kept on hitting on this throughout the postgame shows and even on Twitter when everybody says, I want to keep both. I'd be warned, you got to keep both. You can't just give Murray the keys right now. You got to wait. You got to have a bridge to Murray for the future. Let's have them both. It's better to have them both. Fleury can be a security blanket. Based on Marc-Andre Fleury's tone, what he even said after winning the Cup, where we're going to talk about this later, I want to enjoy this now, I love Pittsburgh, but we were going to talk about this later, he didn't stamp down that I want to stay in Pittsburgh. The rumors that Mark Madden's reporting of his agent has already requested a trade. I even heard rumor, actually, that there's already a trade that has been in place. The Calgary has already put a trade in place and has offered a trade to Pittsburgh that they may accept. So Fleury's going to have some value out there despite a short offseason. But I do believe Fleury's not going to want to do the 1B backup role. He was classy. He was respectful because he won a Cup before and been here so long. Let Matt Murray have the job now and was deservingly so to have the job now. But I do believe that Fleury's going to politely and respectfully request the trade, go somewhere else to rejuvenate his career, want to eventually be a starter again, get more wins, beef up the resume, retire with 400-plus wins, 500-plus wins, and go to the Hall of Fame for sure, rather than risk being a backup with Pittsburgh and even winning more Cups but not getting the wins, not playing enough. He's in his early 30s. He still wants to start in this league, believes he can. I do believe Fleury's going to request a trade and want out, even without drama, but just respectfully want a trade. And if he does so, they're going to grant him that and also want the cap relief for the future and trying to retool this team. If not, the expansion draft could certainly have a team claim Marc-Andre Fleury. He's an early 30s, Stanley Cup winning, borderline Hall of Fame, 300-plus game-winning goaltender. I'm sure they would love to have him. So I don't believe Fleury will be back. I think something will occur this offseason. He will either be traded, he will be picked up in the expansion draft, or even want out, and Fleury will proactively request that trade. But we'll be stuck with Matt Murray next year, and that's not a problem. He's won a Stanley Cup through a playoff, but he's young. And you just don't know. If Cam Ward's the ceiling, or if Patrick Waugh's the ceiling and Cam Ward's the floor, that would be fine. But if Cam Ward's the ceiling and, say, Jim Carrey with that one miraculous postseason and then nothing after, if that's the floor, then you're concerned about winning another Cup. Then you're concerned about going back-to-back and even winning a third ring for Crosby and Malkin. You just don't know. You'd like to have them both, but I don't think it's going to be possible. I think Fleury's going to want out, and I don't blame him. Nick, lastly, put this in proper perspective. We talked about all four of the Cups. This is the fourth in franchise history. It was kind of unexpected because of how asinine the season was with drama and the recent playoff disappointments. They're still a very, very good team, though. They could easily win again. But what's the proper perspective the fans should have on the 2016 Penguins Stanley Cup run?
This is very hard to do, and I know this firsthand. A year ago today, it's the last time I'll ever bring this up because it's a year plus, it's gone.
But, you have brought up a lot, today, yes. I can bring it up for you. I think I've heard it so much.
Yes, exactly. A year ago today, I was part of the team that lost in Game 7 of the Kelly Cup Finals. We went an entire run, and we lost Game 7. On top of that, I have the privilege of covering the Carolina Panthers on their Super Bowl run. And I've seen how hard it is. And then I had the privilege of covering the Penguins for Penn's Initiative and see them win. I've seen multiple angles of this. I've seen teams in different leagues do this, and I've seen how hard it is, the toll it takes mentally and physically. I've seen how they are in the locker rooms and are around the rink and around the stadium when the fans aren't there. I've seen the limping. I've seen the tape wraps that you don't see. Physically, mentally, this is draining. This is hard to do. That's why back-to-back is so hard, not because competition's there, but because to have those bumps and bruises in back-to-back years, it adds up. That takes years off your life kind of thing. I appreciate this because we don't know when it'll come along next. And if 2009 didn't teach you that, then please learn that now because there is a chance. I think it's a very realistic chance given history and given pattern, Crosby and Malkin era. Beyond that, who knows? So savor this and enjoy this. If you're going to the parade tomorrow, remember it. Put the phone down and enjoy it because you don't know when you'll be able to do this again. We hope and the odds are in their favor that they can do it again, but you just don't know. It's appreciated.
Nothing's guaranteed.
Nothing. So I hope you took in every second of Game 6 as much as you could and soaked it in. I hope you were at console or at home with a loved one or at a bar and just took it all in. I hope you're in San Jose and took it in. I hope you're going to be at the parade tomorrow and just enjoy it because, man, this is special. Even the teams that get there, they don't always win. As we see, you get a 50-50 shot. We've seen them win 4. We're lucky to have only seen them lose 1. Enjoy this.
Enjoy it and appreciate it. I think that does summarize it perfectly because we've seen many great teams over the years, as San Jose Sharks teams of the past, just as Washington Capitals teams under Alexander Ovechkin, didn't get it done. They felt like they were good enough. They felt like they even were lucky enough, and they just somehow or another didn't get it done. The Penguins franchise, you asked Mary Lemieux and Jaromír Jágr, Nick, what was the best team they ever were on? I bet you Mary Lemieux and Jaromír Jágr might tell you 93. That team was really, really good, and if that was the fifth Stanley Cup, we'd all be saying 93 was the best team because they even had more Hall of Famers and they ran through the league even more and were even more dominating through the year. But they didn't win the Cup. They didn't go 3 in a row. And they probably will always remember that as the Cup that got away. They didn't even get to a Cup final and they felt like that was the best team of the three of the early 90s. Nothing is guaranteed. You don't know. There's not many Hall of Famers. Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey, just passed away. We have the article I wrote for PensInitiative.com. All the points, even with penalty minutes, was a legendary player looming over the sport and one of the best ever still, 4 Stanley Cups. He also lost in the Cup final an abundance of times. People don't remember. He could easily have had 9 Cups, but he won 4, only 4. You just don't know. Lemieux only got 2. Gretzky never won another one after leaving Edmonton, even though they won again. You never, never know. Nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is for sure. You got to appreciate every championship, every moment you can. And if it does take them another 5 or 6 years to win, or if they don't ever win, that does not mean Crosby and Malkin's legacies are for naught. All of those talks before were kind of ridiculous, but now they really, really would be. And if you win a cup every 5 or 6 years, even every 7 years, I'll certainly take it. That's fine. You win a cup every 7 years, mark me down. I'm with that. Not many franchises can say that. Many, many successful franchises haven't won that many. And even you look at all the Cup champions the last 25 years, the Red Wings and Penguins both have won 4, which is tied for the most in the league in the last 25 years for Stanley Cups. I bet you the Detroit Red Wings feel like they should have won about 7 or 8. They should have won more. The Penguins had a lot of those years where they were horrendous in the early 2000s, mid-90s even, late 90s, where they really weren't a Cup contender even when they were good, and then some years where they were bad. The Red Wings, 25 years in a row in the playoffs, they were in another Cup final, in another couple Cup finals, actually, and so many Western Conference finals, they probably feel like they should have won more championships. The Penguins were lucky enough to get 4. There were Cups left on the ice for the Red Wings, so nothing is guaranteed at all. And Crosby's very lucky to have 2, so is Malkin, so is his team, very lucky to be champions this year. It was a pleasure, as always. It was more of a pleasure this year than the last 2 years because this year concluded in a Stanley Cup. Those years did not, but it was still a pleasure nonetheless.
Absolutely. It was an unbelievable run from when we were both kind of burnt out by it to start early on in the season to now where we're just renewed. And, man, I'm ready to do 10 more shows a week, but alas, we're not going to be able to. We could, but we're not going to.
Yeah, we really didn't even want to do these post-game shows. We were so burnt out. In December and January, we were talking about disbanding the whole operation of Radio PI, and then all of a sudden they go ahead and win the Stanley Cup, and we do post-game shows all the way through that get listens, get colors, and we do the type of shows, and we have credentials. We picked it up, just like the Penguin franchise.
And if we hadn't done that, we wouldn't know about Bryce. So really, we're all
we would not.
Here.
We would not. Bryce from Brooklyn, give yourself a round of applause for Bryce from Brooklyn, and one last time for Bryce from Brooklyn.
Don't think shit, think pink gators. My Detroit players, 10 for my hooligans in Brooklyn. Dead right, it's a head right, Biggie there, air night. Papa been smooth since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruise, cruise, who? Do something to us.
Come on.
Talk, go through us. Girls want to us.
We'll leave that in the background as we close up shop here for Bryce from Brooklyn. And we can't thank Bryce from Brooklyn for calling in and can't thank him enough here. We're going to actually take callers. We didn't do it the last 2 years in the postgame shows, but he called in. We let him on, and he provided us a nice casual fan take with some intelligence in there. And we do owe him a T-shirt. I told him we'd get him a T-shirt. We got to get him a T-shirt. So, Nick, it's been real, and it's been real great since the Penguins won the Stanley Cup. If they didn't, I wouldn't say that, but it's been real, and it's been real great. The Penguins are Stanley Cup champions. Go about the rest of your day. We'll throw this on the website sometime soon, and then it'll live in infamy just like the Penguins Stanley Cup.
That's right. I'd say let's enjoy the draft, but we don't have a lot of picks. But right now, who cares? We won the cup.
Nothing. Yeah, no one cares about anything. When you're Stanley Cup champions, that's why you go all full deck. You go all full bore. Once you win a Stanley Cup, nothing else really matters. Even the Fleury drama, nothing matters when you win a Stanley Cup. All right. Thanks.
Mike, it's been a pleasure. We'll do it again next year.
We will meet again, Nick, as the Pittsburgh Penguins will meet the National Hockey League again, and when they do, they will do it as Stanley Cup champions. And all the drama of, do you make this trade? Do you make this move? Do you risk this future? Do you do this? Do you do that? The drama of player disappointments, Crosby Malkin's legacy, Kessel needing to reboot his own legacy, answer his own critics, then coming to Pittsburgh, Letang's critics, Fleury's critics who he can be answered despite getting hurt and taking over, Murray surprising us, becoming the starter in the playoffs, emerging at the scene and winning a cup. This whole team, the drama, everything of the past 7 years since 2009, all the drama, all the criticisms, all the legacy talk, all of that, it was worth it because of now and because of this Stanley Cup. It was necessary to win the Stanley Cup now, to silence all that now and the offseason, the future. Even if you would miss next year and you don't go back-to-back, which is so, so tough, not happening since the 97-98 Red Wings, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It just would not, because you have this cup thing too. They silenced these critics. They did this. They did it now. They accomplished this feat, and this team will live forever as one of the best teams and as Stanley Cup champions, and that's what's so important. It has brought the fun back, the polarizing effect of the fan base, the civil war for fans on Malkin, fans on Crosby. All of that has dissipated. All of that has been silenced. Or at least for the most part, there's some buffoons out there and yinzers who are still going to be loud, but it's realistically and logically dissipated and been silenced. And being a Pittsburgh Penguins fan is fun again. The team, you got to have fun when you're Stanley Cup champions. Watching the team is fun again. I'm sure playing on the team and coaching the team is fun again. And regardless, even if you're not having fun, there's just not much to criticize and hate on, even if you want to. I'm a guy who likes to find what I can hate on. You really can't hate on a Stanley Cup championship. So for my co-host here on Radio PI and all this radio gold we produce, Nick Hayes, for everybody at PensInitiative.com, still look for the articles, the analysis, the entertainment, all of it through the offseason and then into next year. Go to PittsburghSportsInitiative.com, our cousin site, where you get all of the Pittsburgh Penguin analysis, entertainment, game previews, game recaps that you see on PensInitiative.com, also there, but you also can add Pittsburgh Steelers, Pittsburgh Pirates coverage with that website. The podcast is on both PensInitiative.com and PittsburghSportsInitiative.com. We want to lastly and finally thank DKPittsburghSports.com, who's been a sponsor with us for many, many years, as well as allowing their staff members to appear, Josh Yohe in particular, to appear on our radio airwaves. Also, this broadcast, as well as all the Radio Gold on API and Penn's Initiative's airwaves, is powered and made possible by Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractics, and we want to thank him, give him a special shout-out and thanks to Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractics. If you need some adjustment, if you need to relieve all that stress from the past, go there, but you shouldn't have much stress because if you're a Penguin fan, you're a Stanley Cup champion. Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractics. And for every member of Pittsburgh Penguin Nation that didn't believe, that wasn't having fun, well, now there's reason to believe, now there's reason to have fun, and you deserve this, as well as everybody involved in any capacity deserves this championship, as your Pittsburgh Penguins are the 2016 Stanley Cup champions. I have been your host. I'll pat myself on the back since no one's here to thank me, but I have been your host, Mike Osti. And the Pittsburgh Penguins, after one hell of an asinine roller coaster season and year for the ages, your Pittsburgh Penguins are the 2016 Stanley Cup champions. Lord Stanley has returned to sip some brandy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it happens. All of this happens. And all the love of this season and specialness of this season happens. Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup happening here too. But as the Pittsburgh Penguins have finally claimed the NHL's version of gold, we close the book on another year of radio gold here on the Pens and Sheer Airwaves and the Radio PI Podcast Network.
When it's time to party, we will party hard.